The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be with you yet again in this shorter week. Coming up on today's program, we've got some of the Monday work that we put in. We'll be playing that for you in the second segment, a segment we did for TV over here on Giving Up the World, so you can look forward to that Bible study in the second half of today's show. One email that I'll start with. It says here, I was very glad that you covered the detail about the Fox reporter who was fired for what she said and discussed how the Trumpet program doesn't answer to advertisers. I'm trying to make a conscious effort to substitute church-sponsored and related material into what I take in, instead of some other go-tos that just don't help me advance, so I hope to tune in more often to your program. So she's not alone. There are more people tuning in more often, some diehards out there listening to the live stream, and of course, many coming back later and listening to these podcasts as they're posted on the trumpet.com website and at kpcg.fm. Well, that explosion that you just heard came from the heads of radical leftists who just heard that Donald Trump was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. Can you believe this? U.S. President Donald Trump, of course, it's being covered at the obvious news sources, Fox News, the New York Post. It'll be interesting to see how the liberal media covers this. But evidently, some official in Sweden, I think it is, he nominated the president, sent this letter to the Nobel Committee, saying that the Trump administration, according to Fox, had played a key role in the establishment of relations between Israel and the UAE. And this is a quote from his nomination letter. It says, as it is expected, other Middle Eastern countries will follow in the footsteps of the UAE. This agreement could be a game changer that will turn the Middle East into a region of cooperation and prosperity. So some hopeful remarks there. Of course, the Middle East, in fact, Jerusalem in particular, specifically, is a powder keg that's actually going to set off World War III. But what's interesting here is at least you have a nomination being put forward by for a U.S. president based upon what the president has actually done. That's refreshing. The track record, the actions, the doing. If you think back to 2009, Barack Obama he wasn't just nominated, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. I forget how many weeks into his tenure as president, he won the prize. He won the prize. This was how the Nobel Peace Prize, or the committee back then, explained it, saying they awarded him the prize, that would be Barack Obama, for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples. It says the committee has attached special importance to Obama's vision, his vision of and work for a world without nuclear weapons. So essentially, they awarded him the Nobel Peace Prize, not for what he did, but for what he said he would do, which he didn't do. He won the Nobel Peace Prize because of his speeches. His speeches. So here's President Trump now being nominated, at least, at the very least, for something he's done. It would be a shock to see him actually win the prize. But still, it's worth pointing this out. Good for that individual. He's got a name I can't pronounce, by the way. So he's the one that put forward the president, or nominated the president for the Peace Prize. Well, the Rochester police, this is where the latest incident between a black suspect and police officers happened. It actually happened back in March, but it was just made public recently. And so the rioting is off and running in Rochester. It's not near as bad as Kenosha. But you have the chief of police and his deputy and six other department leaders in the Rochester Police Department. They all abruptly stepped down yesterday. And this came as a great shock to the mayor and the council president. But they're resigning in protest, basically. They don't like this movement to defund the police. They don't like the fact that the police are singled out as the problem as opposed to the solution. And once again, not surprisingly, the city leadership in Rochester, it's a deep dark blue. It's run by Democrats. We see this story play out over and over again. There's a couple of stories in the Wall Street Journal about this Democrat primary in Rhode Island and how that one candidate is visiting elderly care centers to help seniors cast their ballots. This is interesting. What could go wrong? Here's how the Wall Street Journal sums it up, the Democrat strategy. It says liberals push to relax rules protecting ballot integrity on the pretext of protecting society's vulnerable from COVID-19. Then they target the elderly to harvest ballots. They're going around saying, here, let me help you with your ballot. It says House Democrats want to mandate this nationwide. They want it nationwide. They want a nationwide mail-in or mail-out ballot. And, of course, a lot of states are happy to comply. And this is something, I won't play the clips again, but this is something that President Trump has been out on the campaign trail denouncing. He sees what they're up to. Pretty good summary or summation of the strategy. Here they are pushing to relax all the rules for voting. And then they're going around harvesting ballots from these elderly care centers. The Journal also has a good piece about the courts picking the next president and how that this election coming up on November 3rd, it's going to come down to some significant battleground states just like it did in 2016. And here's what the Wall Street Journal editorial board says. The way to protect Democratic legitimacy, and you know what the Democrats are calling for, the fact that it's going to go on for weeks, right? They're going to have to count and count and count all these ballots. We're in the year 2020. We're in the most prosperous, powerful, technologically advanced nation in the world. But somehow or another, this election is going to take weeks, perhaps months. It could take months to count them, to count all the votes. The Journal says this, the way to protect Democratic legitimacy in an anxious age is to run elections by the book. It's to run elections by the book. That's the way to give your democracy legitimacy. You do it according to the rules. But you see, the Democrats, they want the rule book thrown out the window. They want to overturn the system. As I said yesterday, I mean, they're planning for their conspiracy in plain sight. They're coming out and announcing it. I went through that, some of it anyway, yesterday on the program. The Red Mirage and all the steps that they're taking to just prepare the media, to prepare all of the members of the resistance for a disputed election. California, I mentioned the wildfires yesterday. They have a governor named Gavin Newsom. He tweeted out the fact that in 2019, there were about 5,000 wildfires and 118,000 acres burned. And then he says so far this year, there's been 7,600 fires and 2.3 million acres burned. You see what he says there at the end of his tweet. Climate change is real. Yes, it's certainly not his fault, all these fires, or the fact that they don't clear away the dry and dead underbrush. Never! Never do they do this. Every year. Now, you certainly have to factor in curses from God. Amos 4, Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26, for sure. But this is just a convenient excuse for them to put the blame on people who deny climate change. It's never our own sins. It's never our own fault. It's the atmosphere or the people that pollute it. And wouldn't you know it, let me just think about this for a second. It's been worse this year than last year, and yet the state, for months, has been under total lockdown. You would think, if anything, that would cool things off. Worse than ever. 2.3 million acres burned. Here's the governor yesterday saying that he just doesn't have patience for those who deny climate change. Clip one.
I have no patience, and I say this lovingly, not as an ideologue, but as someone who prides himself on being open to argument, interested in evidence, but I quite literally have no patience for climate change deniers. It simply follows completely inconsistent that point of view with the reality on the ground, the facts as we are experiencing.
So the argument over facts. He's not an ideologue. He's just there. He's just there to tell you the facts. I went through a study over the weekend, all these verses that talk about the truth of God. You're familiar with some, I know. John 17:17, God's word is truth. Sanctify them through God's truth, the word of God. There's this verse, by the way, I just looked at it right before coming up here. This is 1 Peter 2 and verse 22. Sorry, 1 Peter 1 and verse 22, it says, "Seeing you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit." This is how we purify our souls. This is how we purify our minds, our thoughts. It's by being pure, or rather obeying the truth. 1 Peter 1 and verse 22. That's how we purify ourselves. We need the truth of God. And when you see all these prophecies, Sam was making this point this morning, like Isaiah 59 and verse 15, how that the truth fails. I mean, these verses that we've read all of these years leading up to where we are now, and yet we're seeing it fulfilled. We're seeing what it's like to cast truth to the ground. We're seeing what happens to our nations when truth fails and people just get up and proclaim these blatant, audacious lies. They have no problem with it. Governor Andrew Cuomo, I mean, you know about the attack on President Trump regarding what he said or didn't say 2 years ago in France. The vets, the war dead of the U.S., they're losers. That was last week. And you can expect more of the same from here on out. Every single week. Here's what Governor Andrew Cuomo said yesterday about COVID in New York. Clip two.
Donald Trump caused the COVID outbreak in New York. Donald Trump caused the COVID outbreak in New York. That is a fact.
That is a fact. Donald Trump is the cause. He caused it in New York, says the governor, who's got blood on his hands. You know about the mandate in late March. In fact, he's being investigated for this. He's being investigated. What he did to those elderly care centers. Bill Jacobson, I think it is, over at Legal Insurrection, he suggested that Cuomo may really be feeling the heat as a result of this investigation. This is from The Hill. It says, New York's official nursing home death toll is over 6,600, though the Associated Press reported last month that the number could be undercounted because New York only counts residents who died on nursing home property to determine the death toll. It says data from the Kaiser Family Foundation suggests that New York could have a nursing home death toll of over 11,000, according to the AP. It says the Justice Department is currently considering an investigation into whether four Democratic-led states, including New York, violated the civil rights of nursing home residents by requiring nursing homes not to turn away other residents for readmission after they had COVID-19. Now think about all of the lockdown restrictions. What you can and cannot do, where you can and cannot go, what you have to use to cover your face. And here was a mandate that said you have to accept sick people back into your elderly care center. You have to. You have no choice. Think about that mandate. That was March 25th. And something like 11,000 elderly people died in New York as a result. Well, these sick patients came into these facilities and the sickness just spread like the wildfires in California. And here's Governor Cuomo yesterday saying, well, it's Donald Trump's fault. He's the cause. He used the word cause. Donald Trump is the cause. Here is the president standing alone in February. Even some of the things he said in late January. Remember that time when they were all, the radical left, totally preoccupied, obsessed with impeachment, could care less about the pandemic. Nancy Pelosi was inviting people to come to the streets of San Francisco. Yeah, we got to celebrate. Celebrate in Chinatown. Why not? Nothing to worry about here. What about the sickness? It's just the flu. It's just the flu. Donald Trump puts in a travel ban, and they say it's racist. They say it's racist. And here's Governor Cuomo yesterday, just yesterday. Donald Trump caused the COVID outbreak. Legal Insurrection says, I find it fascinating that Cuomo and the rest of the Democrat Party media complex is sweeping China's involvement in the origin and spread of the Wuhan coronavirus. He went on to explain that it came from these travelers coming in from Europe. There might have been a travel ban on China early on, but it was the ones in Europe that came over to New York City. Donald Trump didn't act soon enough, too little, too late, yada, yada, yada. So it's his fault. He's the cause. Legal Insurrection says, I suspect the real basis for this particular smear is that Trump is poised to benefit from some good news related to the Wuhan coronavirus. The number of cases in the U.S. has plummeted to a three-month low, and as treatments become more effective and available, the number of fatalities will also decline substantially. The number of cases is plummeting, even though they're still holding that up. It's all that they have left. Cases! More cases now than there were in March and April. And yet the death toll, plummeting! Hospitalizations, plummeting! That's the truth, but the truth fails. So like I said yesterday, you're not going to get context. Listen to, again, Governor Cuomo yesterday, pinning the blame for other disasters on Donald Trump. Here's clip 14.
Trump is actively trying to kill New York City. It is personal. I think it's psychological. He is trying to kill New York City.
So he caused COVID, and he's trying to kill the city of New York. Certainly, just like Governor Newsom, they're not going to look at themselves, anything that they've done wrong. He's the one that has locked it down. It's going to stay locked down. President Trump's urging them to open it up. I remember a few weeks ago, it was a kind of a snarky tweet by, I think it was Paul Krugman working at the New York Times. He's like, I went out for a jog in New York City and I wasn't attacked by Black Lives Matter. Didn't run into any protesters. So his tweet confirms that everything's just fine in New York. Everything's just normal, just like it's always been. Went for a jog, no problem. Never mind the reports of what's happened to our city. This is from his paper. I believe the tweet was Krugman, but if it wasn't. Here's the New York Times, though. The paper of record says Manhattan's office buildings are empty. But for how long? They're empty. Even as the coronavirus pandemic appears to recede in New York, corporations have been reluctant to call their workers back to the skyscrapers and are showing even more reticence about committing to the city long term. Fewer than 10% of New York's office workers had returned as of last month, and just a quarter of major employers expect to bring their people back by the end of the year, according to a new survey Only 54% of these companies say they will return by July 2021, a year from now. So President Trump's out there on these campaign rallies. He's saying, I'll play it if I have time in just a second. He opened these states. They'll open them sure enough on November 4th after the election. Right now, though, they think it serves their purpose politically to keep them shut down so it hurts the economy and hopefully hurts President Trump's reelection chances. That's what's happening here. So these are the authors, Governor Cuomo and others, of the lockdown. And when President Trump will criticize it, they'll always come back, generally speaking, and say, hey, everything's fine in our city. You mind your own business. People are moving here right and left. So here's the New York Times talking about its own city, New York City. Demand for office space has slumped. Lease signings in the first 8 months of the year were about half of what they were a year earlier. That's putting the office market on track for a 20-year low for the full year. When companies do sign, many are opting for shorter-term contracts. Goes on and gives some examples here, saying how that this is a worse recovery. It's a slower recovery than following 9/11. And keep in mind, it's self-imposed. It's self-imposed. How does the article begin? Even as the coronavirus pandemic appears to recede in New York, it's over. It's over. And yet still, got to keep it locked down. It says real estate data confirms that. This is further on. The number of office leases signed from January through August totaled 13.7 million square feet, less than half as much as the first 8 months of last year. Further on, it says this. During any weekday in Midtown, the sidewalks are as empty as they usually are on Sunday. Well, no wonder Krugman was enjoying his jog. He's probably sprinting through those city blocks without fear of running into anybody. There's nobody there. As empty as they are on Sundays. It says, in August, a survey of major employers by the Partnership for New York found only 8% of employees had returned to the office, and most expected to bring employees back by next summer, and another quarter of them had not decided when they would return. And yet Governor Cuomo, he says it's Donald Trump killing New York City. And here's what Donald Trump said in his campaign rally in North Carolina last night, clip 16.
New York, look what they're doing in New York, what they're doing to our beautiful New York. Oh, it's so sad.
Our beautiful New York City. So sad, says the president. They scared everyone to death. In the case of the nursing homes, they killed a lot of people. The mob roamed through the city streets for days on end, smashing up Fifth Avenue. The lockdown continues. Well, we can't even open up the restaurants like we want to, unless we have 4,000 police officers to monitor the face mask policy. That's New York City. Look at what they're doing to New York. It's so sad. The president went on to say this, clip 17.
And it's a shame what's going on. And I'll tell you what, on November 4th, every one of those states will be open. They're doing it for political reasons. No, they're doing it for political reasons. They think by hurting the economy, by keeping all these store owners and all these people that work in shops and stores and buildings, offices, they think by keeping them and hurting them, you're hurting the economy.
They want to hurt the economy because they want to hurt Trump. That was the president, by the way. I think it was Winston-Salem area in North Carolina. 10,000 to 15,000 people turning out to hear him speak at yet another rally, getting off Air Force One, walking along the tarmac, waving at all the adoring fans, and then getting up and speaking. Lots of energy, as per usual. He pointed that out, by the way, saying, look, it's as energized as it was in 2016. perhaps more so. And here we are in the midst of a pandemic. It is quite the contrast when you compare it to his opponent, Joe Biden. He was doing some kind of a virtual town hall yesterday, and he's asked a question, and evidently the question must have been planted, because then he's telling the teleprompter to, you know, move it closer so that I can read the answer to this question. This is clip four.
And I would like to know, what will your administration do to help them give them that chance? Thank you.
Move it up here. You know, there used to be a basic bargain in this country. Workers shared in the wealth their work helped create.
Quite the contrast, as I say, between these two, just even in looking at the energy. But of course, you could dwell on the policies. I don't have time to play the clip, but he said yesterday as well that President Trump is the one who's trying to defund the police. It's not me. It's not the Biden campaign. It's President Trump. Truth fails, just like it says in Isaiah 59 and verse 15. When we come back, as I said, we will conclude today's program with a segment that we taped just a couple of days ago on coming out of the world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Throughout the Bible, God uses his material creation as a vital instrument through which he communicates with mankind.
The scene is nothing short of apocalyptic.
We have nothing left.
The so-called natural disasters we see increasing are, in fact, a tool that the creator of the natural world has reserved for himself to use in order to speak with us.
We have been praying for quite a while now for the eye to pass over so we can get some kind of a break.
Severe natural phenomena are impossible to ignore. Yet for most people, even as our planet is coming apart, the message is still not resonating.
Tonight, along the Texas Gulf Coast, utter devastation. In the town of Rockport, entire blocks are decimated.
The question is, are you prepared to listen?
You know, this is of biblical proportions. Fred, take a look around me.
Our town is destroyed. And it hurts.
Jesus Christ listed nature-related disasters as being a sign of his imminent return. Request the free booklet, Why Natural Disasters, so that you can discern the signs of the times. To order our free booklet, email your request to td@kpcg.fm. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the program. I recently heard a podcast that interviewed the author Nicholas Carr, and he was talking about, he's the author of this book called The Shallows, and he wrote it 10 years ago, and I guess they recently reprinted it, and he added a little bit to the book from 10 years ago. But going back to 10 years ago when he first wrote it, he was talking about what led up to him writing that book. And it basically is a book about how the internet is really turning us into shallow thinkers. The internet, and of course now smartphones and such. But he said 10 years ago when he wanted to write this book that he himself, he had always been a reader in life. He loved reading books and long articles. But as he advanced in age and as technology advanced, he just found himself struggling to deeply concentrate like he had been or had been able to do when he was younger. And so he started to research this out, and he saw how that with the internet back in the early 2000s and the craze back then, blogs and hyperlinks and things of that nature, how that it was causing people to just kind of bounce around and to scratch the surface of subjects, but not really go deeply into it. Now, his book really concentrates just on the changing technology. He's not really talking about how horrible some of the content is with websites and some of the apps and things that people visit through social media or whatever today. But he was just talking about how we've had these dramatic changes in technology, and yet we rarely stop to consider the impact of these dramatic changes. Now, as I say, he originally wrote his book in 2010, and in this podcast, which was just recent, he talked about the tremendous differences or the changes in technology just since he wrote his book. Smartphones, for example, I think the iPhone came out in 2007. So when he came out with his book in 2010, not everyone on Earth, it seemed, had a smartphone or an iPhone. But that certainly is the case today. He was writing his book back in 2009, 2010, talking about the internet and how that we would get on our laptops or maybe a desktop computer, and how that we'd let a lot of that technology over the internet do our thinking for us. Now, people pretty much carry around a powerful computer in their back pocket or in their handbag, an iPhone or a smartphone. Such a powerful, powerful tool. And yet, look at what we're using it for, so many of us. He said in this podcast how that when you consider the smartphone pretty much taking over as the dominant form of computing today, and then that when people do get on smartphones, for the most part, what they're getting into mostly is social media. And so we've seen these dramatic changes just in the past 2 years. And yes, it does give us access to huge amounts of information, but we've also seen our ability to concentrate and to pay attention, that has eroded. We're losing that ability as we're letting the machines, as we're letting the smart devices do our thinking for us. So this interviewer that's talking to Nicholas Carr, he said, do you think your book is still relevant to today, given all the advances in technology over the past 10 years? And he said, all the more so, because if anything, it's much worse today than it was when he was researching for his book before 2010. He explained on this podcast that over the past generation, we've pretty much transitioned from a literate brain to an internet brain. We pretty much let electronic devices do our thinking for us. Now, is that a good thing? Is that really good for our depth of thought? For our reasoning? You look at some of the things happening in the world today, just to dwell on this point for a moment, letting our electronic devices or our smart devices think for us. Here today, just in the past few months, we've seen an erosion of freedoms, liberties, civil rights, that sort of thing, as so many of our people in nations all over the world are just withdrawing to confined spaces. And you have to wonder if we would have been so quick to do something like that if it wasn't for our devices that we're just addicted to. You know, we'll hole up in our homes, but as long as we have the phone, as long as we have, you know, the movie subscriptions, as long as we have the smart TVs or the laptops, that's okay. We can still sort of carry on in our own little world. But generations ago, how tolerant do you think our nations would have been to just sacrifice their freedoms for something, really, when you look at it historically, it's not as significant as a world war. Our nations have gone through world wars. Our nations have gone through so-called natural disasters and pandemics from 1917 and 18, the Spanish flu, and there were pandemics in the 1960s that didn't just shut down entire societies. And yet today, here we are, just with our alone in many cases, but yet with our devices. And as I say, letting those devices do our thinking for us, let's look at 1 John chapter 2 to begin our study today. I am suggesting to you that the technology today, as powerful as it is, and we make use of it to try to distribute God's truth to as many people as possible, but the downside is that it's really turning a lot of us into passive followers, like sheep. We just kind of go along with the crowd. And it's making us weaker, not just physically, but mentally and spiritually. And so many of our people today are afraid and paranoid of disease or of whatever the boogeyman might be. It's not good. It hasn't promoted good health, physically or spiritually. It says in 1 John 2, verse 18 from the Revised Standard Version, "Children, it is the last hour, and as you have heard, that Antichrist is coming. So now many Antichrists have come. Therefore, we know that it is the last hour." There's a lot of deception in this world today. There's a lot of people working in opposition to Jesus Christ and the true gospel message. And yet, how many people are even aware of it? Again, we get lost in our own little world of make-believe, and we can't think for ourselves. We've lost the ability to reason. We're shallow, as that book title suggests. Look at this quote from the last hour. My father says, he's commenting on 1 John 2 here. He says, "We are running out of time. Things will never return to the way they were. From now on, we're in the last hour, a time like no other. We'll experience the worst turmoil and violence ever on earth. How do you manage your time?" he asked. "How urgent are you in organizing your time? We all need to get motivated to do more. We have less than an hour left." Spiritually speaking, we just have a little time left. And look at how much of that time is just being wasted away through trivial things, social media and the like. Now, in one sense, you consider prophetically what we're living through right now. This is an exciting time to be alive. We're right here. We're right here just before the return of Jesus Christ to this earth, the spectacular return of God's Son to this earth. Now, all of these sobering prophecies that we talk about on this program and on our radio station and on the trumpet.com website and in our trumpet magazine, there are some sobering, terrifying prophecies, in fact. But they culminate in the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. That's the good news. But still, how many people are totally asleep to the fact that we're this close to the return of Christ? Why are they asleep? What's the problem? Well, back up to verse 15, it says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him." God says that if you love this world and the things of this world, and we'll get into what those things are here in just a moment, but if you're into that, then you can't have the love of God. That's how serious this is. This comes from a Worldwide Church of God leadership training series. It says here, "Satan is the god of this world, and he has arrayed the entire society against us to distract us and snare us as we seek to draw near to God and to serve him." It says, "Satan is the world's greatest time waster, and he's designed this society and this world to waste your time and your life." Now think about this. He has designed this society and the world to waste your time. Now those technological devices, they can be very helpful in seeking the truth of God if you use them the right way. But millions upon millions of people, including our own children, are just wasting away their time and they're wasting their minds, in truth, on these so-called technological advances because they're consuming so much filth. Their minds are far from God. Totally distracted away from what's true, from what's right, from what's important and valuable. We've got to dig into the truth of God. Disconnect from this world and the ways of this world. and really plug in to God's mind. Now that takes some time, and it takes doing things differently than what we see so many in our world doing today. Continuing on here in 1 John 2, verse 16, it says, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abides forever." All the things in this world, the things that might seem interesting or enjoyable, but that really just make us unhappy and miserable and bored. We have all of these devices, and yet look at how much boredom there is. Look at how much discouragement there is. Look at how much depression there is. Look at how much suicide there is. And this is happening most in the more prosperous Western nations, the nations where everyone and their children has a phone in their back pocket. So why this paradox? All of these advances in technology, and yet the corresponding advance in the consumption of evil and all of the curses that come along with it, like I just mentioned. We're living in dangerous times. God put us on this earth. We only have a short time to make the very most of it and to grow in character. But look at what we're doing, so many of us. Look at what we're doing or not doing with our time. Notice Ephesians 2 and verse 2. God put us here to, we have a short time on this earth to grow in godly character, to prepare for our calling in God's family, God's kingdom. And most of this world, of course, is blind to that purpose. But if you're watching this program regularly, then God's opening your mind to the truth. And he expects you to do something with it, to act on this, to use this knowledge, to change your life, to change your habits. It says here in Ephesians 2:2, "Wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world." Paul's addressing people that had come into the church, God's true church, that little flock, as it's called in Scripture. And he says, now in the past, you walked according to the course of this world. The world is on the course of its God, its Father, and that is Satan the devil. 2 Corinthians 4:4, look it up later. Don't believe me, believe your Bible. Look at what the Bible says. Who is the God of this world? Who set up the world to be the way it is? What about the course of this world? In times past, you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. There's a spirit. Satan is broadcasting. Satan is surcharging the air with his attitudes and ideas and impulses. And that's why we see so much unhappiness and division, so much war and strife, so many people who are terrified, cowering in fear, afraid to even live their lives. This is in Mystery of the Ages. Mr. Armstrong says, "The human spirit within each human is automatically tuned to Satan's wavelength. It seems as if Satan has surcharged the air over the entire earth with his attitude of self-centeredness and vanity." He's just filled the earth with these attitudes. And we've got to disconnect from that. We've got to turn off those influences and plug into the mind of Christ. Like Philippians 2:5 says, "Let the mind of Christ in." That leadership training series talked about how that, you know, we've got technology now. The church of God, the work of God, has the technology now to really spread God's truth over the earth like never before. But it's as if Satan has jammed the frequency of that signal because of all of this, these distractions. It seems as if as technology advances to help the spread of God's truth, that Satan just puts more noise and confusion out there so that people have a hard time even hearing the signal that's coming from God. We have a lot more. I've quoted from this book on the program here, The Last Hour, about just how short our time is and how that we've got to make the very most of it. And I'll quote some from this big book, Herbert Armstrong's autobiography, because if you want to study into the life of someone who really did disconnect from this world and its evil influences. That doesn't mean he went off and lived like a hermit somewhere. He went right around the world with God's truth. But he did come out of this world, as 1 John 2 says that we should. He came out of this world and its evil influences and obeyed God and served God and proclaimed the truth of God. He did it for over 50 years. As I say, we'll talk a little bit more about his example in the next segment. For now, make sure that you jot down the phone number on your screen or call our operators here during the break and request The Last Hour and Herbert W. Armstrong's autobiography. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
I quoted from Herbert Armstrong's classic work, Mystery of the Ages, in the first segment. That's a book, by the way. We've produced a program advertising that book. We've repeated it dozens of times by now. Our most popular book by far. But he writes in this book, if by the way, if you want to request that, ask our operators for Mystery of the Ages as well. I don't want to just pile on too much information. You've got quite a lot to read just in these two, of course. But still, Mystery of the Ages, that's like a magnificent summary of Herbert Armstrong's life's work. Just an incredible book, a marvelous vision. And in that book, by the way, he says this, "I think one of the greatest tests that everyone whom God has called faces is giving up this world and being part of it." That is one of your greatest tests. It's my greatest test. It's our greatest test. Coming into the church, we've got to forsake the ways of this world. We've got to come out of the world just like the Israelites of old came out of Egypt, Egyptian captivity. They were held captive. And Satan, as the god of this world, has the whole world in captivity. And yet, we can come out of that world with God's help and forsake it. It's not easy. Look at Lot's wife. Look at how she looked back. Even as she was escaping from this horrible society, she should have sprinted out of that city as it was. I mean, she I won't go into the details of what the city was like, but it was disgusting, just filled with evil. And she should have sprinted out of that city as it was. She got a little ways out and she longingly looked back. That's how much she had absorbed the ways of the world. It's so easy when we're living in it to just let it in to our houses through the television, through the laptop, through the computer, through the smart devices, and to just fill up on that filth. Notice Luke chapter 16, this is verse 13. Christ says, "No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon, or materialism, or the ways of this world. It can't be both. It's got to be one or the other." Notice what it continues to say here. Verse 14, "And the Pharisees also, who were covetous, heard all these things, and they derided him. And he said unto them, You are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of God." That's quite a statement coming from Christ. The things that we highly esteem, that which is highly esteemed among men, in God's sight, what is it? It's an abomination. You see, God has a very different opinion of this world than you and I probably have, humanly, carnally. God says the things that men highly value, what an abomination. The things that men put on as a parade, or that they celebrate, or that they award, God sees it as an abomination. What did Mr. Armstrong say? One of the greatest tests that we're going to experience or face is giving up this world and the ways of this world. Now, as I said in the first segment, in his autobiography, Herbert Armstrong spends a lot of time talking about what led up to his conversion to the truth in 1926, and just the agonizing, gut-wrenching ordeal that 6-month period was, as he had to surrender to God. In a lot of ways, he said, being conquered by God, it was humiliating. He had his vanity totally crushed. He said it was a bitter pill to swallow. what it meant, as he explained in the book, was turning around and going the way of God. You see, a completely opposite way, the way of the Bible, living according to every word in the Bible, instead of according to the ways of society or the desires of the flesh and vanity. He had to go in an opposite direction. He had to surrender. As I say, it was a gut-wrenching ordeal, and yet this medicine, going the way of the Bible, it was the only medicine that really gave him true healing and then joy and happiness to go with it. He talked about his Bible study and prayer and this new fellowship, this new friendship that he had with God, a relationship with God. He had to sacrifice some relationships in this world to really draw near to God, because the world, as Romans 8, 7, Jeremiah 17, 9 says, the world's hostile to God and His law. And so when you embrace it, it is going to bring some persecution upon you. He explains in the autobiography, by the way, about what goes into being educated this way, the way of the Bible. And he talked about how it's important to hear lectures from people speaking the truth, to travel the world, to see the world, to meditate on what you're experiencing, what you're hearing. But then he said education also comes from a lot of study, just digging into the Word of God. And that's where I think Nicholas Carr's book is helpful. That's just a secular source. It's not obviously God's truth or God's Word. But in his work, Nicholas Carr's work, he talked about how that for centuries, text on pages had been the dominant cultural medium until we got into laptops and smartphones and such. For centuries, it was just text on a page like this, reading and studying pages like this. That was the dominant cultural medium. And when we get away from that, you can see Satan's hand in this. In a lot of ways, we get away from the Bible. I know there's Bible text on devices as well, but how many people are really poring over every word when they're on a device? Or is it more just scrolling through and just scratching the surface? God says, get into the pages, get into the text. Don't skim the truth of God. Dig deeply into it. And that's what Herbert Armstrong did back in 1926. Now, that's almost 100 years ago, so he didn't have as many distractions as we have today. So it's a lot more challenging in that sense today. But you can do it if you'll just learn to shut off some of those influences coming in from the devil. Close it down. Turn it off. And slow down with your study of God's truth. Notice this from Romans 12 and verse 2. Here's what God expects for us. We talked about coming out of this world and the ways of this world in 1 John 2. Here in Romans 12 and verse 2, it says, "And be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." God, He brings you into the church so that you can be transformed. A great transformation. God is reproducing Himself. So He wants to fill your mind and your heart and your life with these precious words of life contained in the Scriptures. Not very many people will really submit to this truth, these laws of God. They're too busy for God. They're too busy to study God's Word. Well, as this book brings out, we're here in the last hour, right before the return of Christ. We only have a little bit of time left. So what about your time management? What about the changes and the improvements that you can make? If you want to study Mr. Armstrong's example, again, there's that and a lot more in this huge book. But what a fascinating, riveting study it will be if you request the autobiography of Herbert Armstrong today. Very quickly, make sure that you also subscribe to our monthly news magazine. The Trumpet comes out 10 times a year, and this will help you to understand your world under the light of Bible prophecy. All of our material is offered for free without cost or obligation or follow-up. Just call our operators today and request your free copies. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next time.